This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. It's Wednesday, which means it's time to talk sports. And here with us for that is WBUR's Chris Sitterick. Welcome back.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And a producer here, by the way. Let's just make this clear. All right. So I believe there is some good news about the Red Sox.
I've got great news if you like October baseball. The Red Sox are playoff bound once again. It's their third straight year. They locked that up by beating Toronto last night 7-2. And I just want to give some context to this year because there's been a lot of talk about how historic this season has been. That brings their record to 99-46 with 16 games left to play. The franchise record for wins all time ever is 105. So they have a shot to do that. That was way back in 1912. So there's a real chance to make some history here. They'll start to try to do that by going for win 100 tonight. David Price will take the mound in the final of a three-game series with Toronto. And I'm sure, Jill, you're wondering, what about the Yankees, right?
Oh, I am wondering what about the Yankees, because you can't wonder about the Red Sox without wondering
exactly,
about the Yankees.
Exactly.
I know this. Even I know this.
So they've got a 9-game lead on the Yankees. That means the magic number with 16 to play is now 9 left. Magic number, of course, means a combination of Red Sox wins and Yankees losses. Once that adds up to 9, they have locked down the division title. That's huge because a few years ago, baseball kind of restructured the way they do the playoffs, and the two wildcard teams now have to play a 1-game play-in to the playoffs. The division teams get to go right to that first divisional round. So winning your division is a huge advantage and hopefully something the Red Sox are headed towards.
That is something I did not know. But I have to say this. You may say that this is an historic season, but ever since I moved to New England in 1981, 82... The gnashing of teeth is September. You know, it's just, it, this
well,
is not
a,
new.
Well, there's a little bit of a history there.
Okay, there is a history there. And then there was a great moment somewhere after 2001, if I believe.
I can't remember
what year that was.
Panic button.
Okay,
people know what
right,
you're talking
but this
about.
Right, but this is the season of gnashing of teeth, no matter what, as we go into October baseball, clearly. Yeah. So the Red Sox win 7-2 last night. It sounds like a blowout, basically.
It sounds that way, but it wasn't quite so much. Basically, they could not get the offense going last night, and they found themselves down 2-0 going into the bottom of the seventh inning. They finally started to get a little bit of offensive momentum going. Steve Pierce hits a triple. They've got runners on first and third. And so Alex Cora, the coach, knows he's going to pinch hit for the catcher, Sandy Leone, who's been struggling. He's got Mitch Moreland in the on-deck circle, ready to pinch hit. And as Moreland starts to walk up to the plate to take the at-bat, Cora suddenly calls him back. There's a little bit of a scramble in the Red Sox dugout. And here comes Brock Holt.
2-2 on Brock Holt.
So the Red Sox try to steal a run here, too. There they go.
Runner goes Nunez. High fly ball right field. Deep into the corner. Grichuk long run. And it is gone! How about that?
I think Cora made the right decision.
I guess he did make the right decision. It's such a joy to listen to Joy on the field, that is. So why didn't Cora have Holt in there to begin with?
Well, to be honest, Moreland's a better hitter, which makes what happened last night all the more surprising. And here's a little crash course on baseball for you. If you're a right-handed hitter, you would rather face a left-handed pitcher. Has to do with the arm angle. If you're a right-handed hitter on the right side of the plate, I'm throwing with my right hand. It's harder to pick up the ball than if it's coming across my body from the other side. So Moreland's in the on-deck circle. Cora sees that Toronto has a left-handed pitcher in the bullpen ready to go if they do pinch hit Moreland. So basically you put the left-handed Moreland in, here comes the left-handed Toronto pitcher, and Cora's got to then pinch hit for the pinch hitter already. And he decided he'd rather save Moreland for later in the game in case they need him, sends out Brock Holt, and obviously the rest is history. Brock Holt takes it deep, and they end up winning the game. All the more surprising, Brock Holt, not a power hitter. He's got 4 home runs on the year, 2 of those pinch hit home runs, which is incredibly difficult to come in cold off the bench. You're not warmed up. You're not locked in. And to hit 2 home runs for a guy who's not a home run hitter, he's the first Red Sox player ever to hit 2 pinch hit home runs in a season.
Wow, this sounds as complex as getting a daily talk show out the door, if not even more. But I so appreciate your energy around this. I'm not a sports fan, as you all know, or as now you all know out there. But I follow vaguely, and the energy and the insight you have into plays, it just always amazes me. Anybody, it's sort of like the same thing with Monty Python movies, I think, for some.
Oh, don't get me started.
I won't.
We'll be doing quotes
I had
the
this feeling.
The
okay, so it was obviously a great win last night.
What?
It was obviously a great win last night. Is there anything else we were missing? Anything else worth noting?
Big point in the game. Chris Sale is back for the first time since August 12th. He went 1 inning through 26 pitches. They thought about bringing him back for a second inning, but basically Alex Cora didn't want to push it too hard. They had him throw a few more pitches in the bullpen just to stay loose. And Chris Sale talked after the game about how great it was to be back, though he was a little anxious.
Just trying to throw strikes. I mean, it's my first time back out there in a while. Sped up a little bit on me. I feel like I was kind of rushing a little bit. Kind of got out of some of the things that I need to do to stay on top of things. But, ended up getting out of it. Obviously relied on my bullpen a little bit more than I'd like to. But, we move on.
So this part's pretty obvious probably when you're talking about one of, if not the best pitcher in baseball this season. But Chris Sale's going to be huge for this team if the Sox are going to make a deep run in the playoffs.
All right, we will be watching. Even I will be watching. let's talk about football for a bit. The Patriots started the season with a win on Sunday. Anything jump out from that game?
Well, coming into the year, the big concern was the wide receiver position. Philip Dorsett in his second year had a great game, so if he can maintain that, that'll be great. The team is obviously still concerned about the receiver position. They signed three new players this week. Two of those were receivers. The other thing that kind of jumped out at me from Sunday is that rookie linebacker Juwan Bentley looks like he could be an absolute stud on the defensive side of the ball. He called the plays for them this preseason, which is pretty interesting to see a rookie take that kind of responsibility. And he actually played more downs on Sunday than fellow linebacker Dante Hightower, who was actually the team captain. So I expect big things from him this year.
All right. So pulling away from the field of football and out into the culture of the NFL, it has been an interesting time, obviously, for some time now. The Nike ad that's just come out with Colin Kaepernick, the story from last week that brought the anthem issue again front and center. Is that a story you think is going to stick around, or do you think that now that the season is underway, the game can be focused on, we'll move back to looking at the actual game?
I'd like to say it's going away, but I don't think it is. We're still seeing all these calls for Nike boycotts, though it's worth mentioning that their sales are up about 30% since they launched the Kaepernick ad campaign. So I don't know if the boycotts are effective. We have seen one school, a private Christian school, the College of the Ozarks in Missouri, basically got rid of their Nike uniforms that had the Nike logo on them. But most schools are pretty locked into their long-term contracts with the company. I did think it was interesting. There was a video going around online that Reverend Mac Morris at a Baptist church in Mobile, Alabama, actually made a big deal of cutting up some Nike gear, a Nike headband and a Nike sweatband during his sermon on Sunday.
America may not be the best country in the world, and we've got a lot of faults, but I'm telling you what, a lot of folks died for the sake of what that flag represents.
So in terms of actual protests, you had a couple of Miami Dolphins that took a knee during the anthem, one other player who raised a fist. Not a ton of protests around the league, but it's obviously an issue that people on both sides feel really, really passionately about.
So we're not going to have time to talk about these other NFL players who are raising political issues, but I just want to flag that there are other players out there who are, you know, who are raising issues. It's called the Players Coalition. They're not getting nearly as much attention as a group of players. They don't have Nike ads, but maybe we can get back to them.
Yeah, they were actually one of the driving forces behind the deal with the NFL last year for that $90 million towards social justice programs. There's some tension in the group about kind of what the actual ultimate goal is and kind of the messaging behind it. Again, an issue like this where you have people that feel so passionately, obviously you're going to have a differencing of opinions.
Right. And we got the Eagles, Seahawks, players from the Patriots, Redskins. I mean, it is a coalition of players who are trying to bring about some change, social issue change. All right. So let us talk a bit more about Serena Williams. There is more to say. There's always more to say about stories that blew up the way situations that blew up that way that one did last Saturday. We talked about it Monday. What is new in the story about this amazing tennis player and an umpire?
Yeah, this has been a really interesting conversation to watch. Initially, you had kind of the immediate reaction, everybody coming to Serena Williams' defense. The United States Tennis Association President Katrina Adams and the Women's Tennis Association CEO Steve Simon both kind of came out really strongly and supported Williams with statements. The umpire himself actually has spoken for the first time in his native Portuguese, so I'm not going to try to quote that. But basically said, "I'm fine, don't worry about me." Fellow umpires are starting to come forward now and saying that they don't feel that he's getting the kind of support he deserved for handling a really tough situation. And in fact, the International Tennis Federation, which is Ramos's employer, put out a statement in support of Ramos that said, quote, "Ramos undertook his duties as an official according to the relevant rulebook and acted at all times with professionalism and integrity."
All right. So there are others coming to his defense, including Martina Navratilova. I think we're not going to stop to listen to this right now because we have to get on to another story today. But there is a lot out there. And the fallout will continue somewhat. I think what I've been synthesizing is that it gets too simplistic out there in the Twitter land, that there's a lot of nuance to what an umpire has to do. There's a lot going on in the body and the mind of an athlete.
Yeah, and especially a sport like tennis, which is so focused on tradition and kind of maintaining that. You've got some really convoluted rules involving when coaches can and can't give their players feedback. I think hopefully they'll take a look at that. And I think there is a legitimate question about whether or not women and men are held to different standards in terms of penalties. Ultimately, the Martina Navratilova piece you're talking about in the New York Times, her main message was it's possible to talk about those double standards and to try to fix those issues with the game, while at the same time recognizing that Serena Williams might have gone too far in her behavior.
All right. I know we'll stay on it with you in the mixed. Thank you so much. Chris Siderick, you are a radio Boston producer and a sportsman, of course. Stay with us. Listeners, there's more ahead. I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston.